for E14 of Fanacek. We are heading into Thanksgiving of 2023. By the time you listen to this, it'll be Thanksgiving week, and you're going to be heading into your Thanksgiving week listening to a little podcast about Bill Bixby. This is Bill Bixby Part 1. Very, very excited. I've done a lot of two-parters this season, and none of them ever intended to be two-parters when I started them. It's just that these old fuckers worked a lot, man. Like, I'm not kidding. I was like 15 pages of notes into Bill Bixby, and I was like, oh, I guess this is just going to be a part one then, because it would be like a 2.5-hour episode if I did it all in one shot. So good for them. They worked a lot, but bad for me because your boy has to do a lot of research. So I've always liked Bill Bixby. It didn't even occur to me until like a couple days ago to really do an episode on him. He always just seemed like such a warm, gentle kind of guy. I guess because I knew him mostly from The Incredible Hulk, right? So to me, he was always that sad David Banner character, always, hitchhiking at the end of the episode, walking by himself, mild-mannered guy. But I didn't know a lot about him as a person or what other work he did. I mean, I knew the main things. I knew My Favorite Martian, The Courtship of Eddie's Father, The Magician, The Incredible Hulk. And then I knew that he had a really, really successful TV directing career as well. Most notably, I think he directed like 30-plus episodes of Blossom, which we'll get to. As a matter of fact, that's what he was working on when he passed away. I believe he collapsed on the set of Blossom and he died young. That's really all I knew about him. So why don't I share with you the knowledge I gained in doing research on Mr. Bill Bixby. He was born Wilfred Bailey Everett Bixby II. That's a mouthful. Wilfred Bailey Everett Bixby III, rather, not the second, the third. He was born on June 22nd, 1934 in San Francisco. There's a great website I go to called History for Sale, and I've bought a lot of autographed stuff over the years. A check that Jack Lord wrote to pay for his life insurance. I've got a George C. Scott autograph, Telly Savalas, George Pappard, Squeaky Frome. I've got all kinds of cool memorabilia that I've gotten from that site. And they have a check that Bill Bixby wrote. I think they got a couple of them. And it was Wilfred Bixby is on the check or something like that. Wilfred Bailey Bixby or something. Wilfred B. Bixby. I forget how it is, but it's interesting. So even that's kind of what he went by in his personal life, but his acting name was Bill Bixby. Like I mentioned, he passed away young. He died in Los Angeles on November 21st, 1993. He was only 59 years old. Got some half-ass research for you here. He was a fourth-generation Californian of English descent and an only child. His father was Wilfred Bailey Everett Bixby II. His dad was a store clerk. His mother, Jane Bixby, was a senior manager at I. Magnin & Company. Don't know what that is. In 1942, when Bixby was 8 years old, his father enlisted in the Navy during World War II and traveled to the South Pacific. Later on, after graduation from high school in 52, Bixby majored in drama at City College of San Francisco against his parents' wishes. That's most people who pursue acting. It's against their parents' wishes. During the Korean War, Bixby was drafted shortly after his 18th birthday. Rather than report to the United States Army, he joined the United States Marine Corps Reserve. He served primarily on personnel management with Marine Attack Squadron 141 at Naval Air Station Oakland, which is shit right near his hometown of San Francisco there. And he attained the rank of Private First Class before his 1956 discharge. Later on, he attended the University of California, Berkeley, UC Berkeley, as they call it, his parents' alma mater, and he left just a few credits short of earning a degree. He then moved to Hollywood, California, where he had a string of odd jobs that included bellhop and lifeguard. He organized shows at a resort in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and in 1959 was hired to work as a model and to do commercial work for General Motors and Chrysler. So that's some half-ass research for you. I got a little bit more. You want some more half-ass research? Here we go. His first marriage was to actress Brenda Benet. Now, this gets sad. So again, that was his first marriage, actress Brenda Benet. They were married in 71, and she gave birth to their son Christopher in September of 74. They divorced in 1980. A few months later, in March of 81, his six-year-old son Christopher died while on a skiing vacation at Mammoth Lakes with his mom. He went into cardiac arrest after doctors inserted a breathing tube when he suffered acute epiglottitis. I'm not sure what that is. So the son died 6 years old. His Bill's ex-wife, the boy's mother, committed suicide the following year. So a lot of tragedy, man. By the way, Bill Bixby was married 3 times. So yikes. That means when he died, he probably died with not a lot of money. Because that's how that goes. But anyway, so we'll get to more half-assed research later on. Why don't we do this? So he is a three-time Emmy nominee. He was nominated in 71 for the work he did on The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Nominated in 76 twice. One for an appearance on the streets of San Francisco. Another for an appearance in Rich Man, Poor Man, the mini-series. Let's go ahead and do my fan check thing and dive into his credits. He's got 78 acting credits. 40... directing credits. Now, 78 acting credits probably doesn't sound like a lot considering, you know, a lot of these guys were doing like 150, 180, 200. However, you got to remember, unlike a lot of the other actors I've covered, he had four shows that were basically either hits or marginal hits, you know? So he did a lot of work in those. I mean, my favorite Martian, The Courtship of Eddie's Father, The Magician, and The Incredible Hulk. I did an interview a couple seasons ago on Fanacek with actor Andre Gower, most famous from that movie, The Monster Squad. And he like had tons of credits, like all kinds of fucking credits, classic TV, Mr. Belvedere, The A-Team. And when I was commenting on that with him, talking to him, he was like, you know, I had all those credits because I never had the hit show. Like I was never on one show for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So Bixby only has 78 credits, but he had four shows that basically made it. And then he had a couple other shows that were his as well that didn't, but he had some good consistent work, which is tough for actors. So again, 78 acting credits, 40 directing credits. I'm going to focus on the acting, but I'd be remiss if I didn't take a closer look at some of the directing stuff because he was really, really prolific with his TV directing. He directed a ton of classic TV, including and starting with his own show, The Courtship of Eddie's Father. That's where he first directed. He directed 8 episodes of that show. He also did shows such as Room 222, Bridget Loves Bernie, The Magician, which was also his show. Mannix, Charlie's Angels, The Incredible Hulk, also his show. Sledgehammer, great show. Oh boy, I haven't even thought of that show in years. What was that, the 80s? Sledgehammer, really fun, like satirical, like action-packed sitcom. He did a few Incredible Hulk TV movies, which we'll get to, an episode of Ferris Bueller, which we've talked about, and Blossom. He did 30 episodes of Blossom, which again, we shall get to later. He's got a few directing credits that I never heard of, and they look fun, so I thought I would maybe take a bit of a mini deep dive on some of these. So let's start with those. So he directed a 1975 episode of a show I never heard of called Kate McShane. How about that? So it ran from just 1 year, 1975. It only lasted 12 episodes. Here's the synopsis. The trials of Kate McShane, a middle-aged attorney who often became emotionally involved in her clients. How about that? You know who Kate McShane was? It was Anne Mira, Ben Stiller's mom. What do you think of that shit? Who else was in this? Any of the big names? Bill McGuire. I'm trying to look. Christine Belford from Banachek. She was in this. Look and see who guested on it. Any good guests? Alan Fudge, I know that name. Clue Gulager did it. What's up? Jerry Stiller, of course, did it. That was Ann Mira's husband and Ben's dad. Ed Lauder. Ben Stiller was in it. How about that? Ben Stiller did it. Richard Mulligan did this show. Jack Guilford did this show. Only 12 episodes, but they had some killer guest stars, huh? Let me see. Anyone else I recognize? Stacy Keach Sr. That's interesting. I didn't know there was a Stacy Keach Sr. I've only ever known Stacy Keach. That is interesting. So I think that's it. So that is Kate McShane. Now, another interesting I never heard of. He did a 1978 TV movie called Three on a Date. That's one too many. Three on a Date. The Adventures and Mishaps of four couples, winners on a TV game show along with their young chaperone on a Hawaiian holiday. So again, this is a 1978 TV movie. It's got a pretty cool classic TV movie poster that I kind of dig. Looks like it's like the page out of... TV guide. And it's funny because at the bottom it tells you who's in it. So it's like a black and white drawing of like kind of caricature drawings of the cast again on an island. At the bottom it says starring June Allison, Ray Bolger. Ray Bolger, by the way, was in, he was a scarecrow in Jesus. Wizard of Oz, my gosh. John Berner, Dee Dee Khan, Carol Lawrence, Meredith McRae, Rick Nielsen, Patrick Wayne, and 7 former Playboy Playmates. They had me at 7 former Playboy Playmates. Anyway, and here's the tagline. You've just won a fabulous week in Hawaii with the blind date of your dreams. Three on a Date, the love romp that starts where the dating game stops. Again, you keep bringing playmates, I'll keep going on that date. Let's take a look at the cast. June Allison, she was the mom in, is it Beaver? Leave It to Beaver? What was she the mom in? Or was it Husband Knows Best? Daddy Knows Best? What the fuck? June Allison. What was her big show? Now you're going to make me go back and look. I swear to God, was she not the mom in Leave It to Beaver? Or was it Father Knows Best? Or am I just have my head up my ass? All right, I'm going to scroll through. You're listening to me. Scroll. Let's take a look here. Man, she worked a lot in the 40s. I got to get like into the 50s here. You can play along at home and see if I'm right or not. Right? Wasn't it damn Leave It to Beaver? What was she in? I guess I must have been wrong. I don't see any of those. I thought it was Father Knows Best. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. She wasn't in any of that stuff. Anyway, June Allison, big name. Thank you for indulging me on that fucking shit fest of me not knowing what I'm talking about. Again, Lonnie Anderson, Ray Bolger, Didi Khan. She was Frenchie in Greece, wasn't she? Was she Frenchie? Yeah, she was Frenchie. Meredith McRae. Meredith McRae came up a lot in the last episode, the Paul Leiter episode. She was one of his go-tos. Anyway, guess who directed this movie, by the way? 300 Date. Mr. Bill Bixby. So there you go. And of course he directed, because that's what I'm talking about. His directing credits. Boy, I'm not even drinking. All right, let's move on. So he directed Goodnight Beantown. That was a TV show, 1983 to 84. It only lasted 18 episodes. I'll read you a quick synopsis. I never heard of this show. It was a Bill Bixby show, by the way. He was the lead in it. The romantic relationship between two Boston news anchors. Those Boston news anchors were Bill Bixby and Marriott Hartley. Tracy Gold was on the show. Tracy Gold, I had a big crush on her when I was young. She was Carol Seaver. She was the daughter in Growing Pains. Her sister was also a child actress, and she was on Benson. So that is Goodnight Beantown. And then let's take a look here. The Nut House. Oh, so actually, one more thing about Goodnight Beantown. It only lasted 18 episodes, but the female lead, Marriott Hartley, got an Emmy nomination for it. So that was kind of interesting. Canceled after 18 episodes, but the lead actor still gets an Emmy nomination. He also directed something called The Nut House. All right, that ran in 1989. It only lasted 10 episodes. Let's take a look at the synopsis of The Nut House, and it's Nut, N-U-T-T. This short-lived comedy dealt with the day-to-day lives of the staff and rare guests in a New York hotel that had fallen on hard times. Let's take a look. Who was in this thing? Wow, great cast. Cloris Leachman and Harvey Korman were the leads. Wow. Harvey Korman, of course, really famous for Carol Burnett Show. Cloris Leachman's a legend. Shit. Molly Hagan was this. Molly Hagan had a great career in the late 80s, early 90s. She was on a show in the early 90s called Herman's Head. She was one of the people in Herman's Head there. And then she also, I remember she was one of the bitchy friends in Can't Buy Me Love, which is one of the great 80s movies of all time. But that is The Nut House. It was created by Mel Brooks, by the way. So that's why he got Harvey Korman and Cloris Leachman, because Mel Brooks was involved. And then, last but not least, that's not true. I'm going to talk about more directing credits. But he directed a 1991 TV movie called Another Pair of Aces, Three of a Kind, which I think is weird. Like, I don't get it. Another Pair of Aces, Three of a Kind? Because it doesn't make sense. But let's read about it. Again, a 1991 TV movie. A gambler, a Texas Ranger, and an FBI agent are investigating a series of vigilante murders. Starring Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Joan Severance, Rip Torn. This thing's loaded, man. Directed by Bill Bixby, of course. Is Bixby in it? I think Bixby's in it because I saw him. Or maybe that was just pictures of him directing. Wow, loaded cast, man. All right. Now, so those are things that I thought were interesting. Now, he's also got some, credits? Like, what the fuck? That he directed. And again, we're still talking about directing. I wanted to point some of these out. So he directed a couple episodes of this show called Wizards and Warriors. It was a 1983 TV series that only lasted 8 episodes. I can't get a feel for the tone of this show. Maybe some of you have seen it. I can't tell really if it's drama or comedy or both. Either way, though, it looks pretty shitty. I'll read you the synopsis and I'll read you the cast. And this is why it jumped out at me. So here's the synopsis. And it also kind of looks like a cartoon. It's not, but it's like animation on top of actors. It's very strange. I don't know what the hell is going on with this show. No wonder it only lasted 8 episodes. But here is the synopsis. Then I'll read you the cast. The legendary kingdom of Camerant is ruled by good King Baldorf and Queen Latinia. Their daughter, Ariel, is engaged to Prince Eric Greystone, who becomes Camerant's champion against a neighboring kingdom ruled by evil Prince Dirk Blackpool. Evil Prince Dirk Blackpool. Jesus fuck. Eric was always helped by his servant, Marco, the strongest man in the kingdom, and often hindered by his ne'er-do-well playboy brother, Justin. Justin, yes, a very medieval name. A variety of wizards and witches, both good and evil, also played a part in the conflict. Now, the lead in this medieval show is Jeff Conaway from Grease and Taxi. Like, what the fuck? Julia Duffy was in it, too. Julia Duffy had a big career in the 80s. I mean, probably most famous for Newhart, right? She was the little blonde. Then she was in, one of those versions of when they turned Look Who's Talking into a TV show. So Look Who's Talking, great series. And well, the original movie's great. Then they made a couple too many sequels, but great movie with Travolta and Kirstie Alley. And they, of course, turned it into a TV show. But the TV show kept evolving because they couldn't find a formula that worked. At one point, Clooney was in it. I think Scott Baio was like a male lead in it for a while. There was a brunette lady who was the lead and the mom. And then eventually Julia Duffy was the mom with the baby. And anyway, so Julia Duffy had a big career in the 80s and probably early 90s as well. Haven't seen her since. I'm going to read a review on this shithole of a show because I just want to kind of get a feel for it. So let's read a review. This person gives it 8 out of 10 stars. So there you go. Sadly went the way of the Charmings, too sorely missed sitcom. So I guess it's a sitcom. It's a shame that this sitcom gem was lost to us due to constant preempting. I've never thought the rating system was all that fair. They should not include moments when primetime shows fall victim to breaking world newscasts, presidential addresses, special miniseries broadcasts, and holiday specials. It's just not an accurate assessment of a show's viewer base. So I guess this show got interrupted a lot by the president and holidays, miniseries. That said, maybe some reviewers are right that the audience wasn't there yet, as the D&D gaming crowd was still mostly a little young to fall into the demographic they were shooting for. But I certainly loved it. I don't think the D&D crowd is going to go for a show with Jeff Conaway as the lead. That guy seemed like such an asshole. Anyway, I'm not going to read anymore, but that is that. I made a note to read one of the trivias, though, so it must have been interesting to me. Give me a second here to get to the trivia. This was the most expensive network series that had been attempted at the time, with a budget of $8 million for 8 episodes. So it was $1 million an episode for this show. So let's move on. Another really weird thing that he directed, like a what the fuck credit that Bill Bixby directed, was the 1993 TV movie, The Woman Who Loved Elvis. And here's why it's weird. I'll read the synopsis in a second, but it's about a woman who loved Elvis, but it stars Tom Arnold and Roseanne Barr. Like, huh? So in 1982, Iowan suburban housewife Joyce Jackson, played by Roseanne Barr, is an obsessed fan of the late Elvis Presley. She's used the so-called King of Rock and Roll's inspiration to turn her small house into a wacky shrine. Convinced that Elvis is still alive, 5 years after his death, Joyce concocts a plan to set off and find and meet him. So she enlists the help of her estranged husband Jack, played by Tom Arnold. Wow. So it's Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold. Cynthia Gibb is in it. Cynthia Gibb, I had such a big crush on Cynthia Gibb. She was in the show Fame. She's also in my opinion, one of the best hockey movies ever. What the hell's the name of that movie? It's one of the best hockey movies ever. Can't think of it. It's one with Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze. Youngblood, that's it. Youngblood. Oh, what a great hockey movie that was. Rob Lowe is like the young upstart hockey player. Patrick Swayze is like kind of the grizzled minor leaguer who kind of like raging, or Bull Durham, like he never quite made it to the pros. Danielle Harris was in this too. Danielle Harris was a little girl. She played Jamie Lloyd in Halloween's 4 and 5. She was also the pregnant Manson girl in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Not a lot of people know that. You got to be super nerdy like me to know that. Anyway, this whole TV movie looks like a shit show. So now that concludes this portion of Bill Bixby's directing career. So let's now look at his acting career. So I will remind you, he's got 78 acting credits. His first one was a 1961 episode of Hennessy. That's come up on the podcast before. His final one was a 1993 episode of Blossom. So let's read about Hennessy. What do you say? Let me pull it up here. So Hennessy ran from 1959 to 1962. It lasted 95 episodes, so it was a legit hit, all right? Let's take a look at the synopsis. United States Navy physician Lieutenant Charles W. Chick Hennessy and Navy nurse Lieutenant Martha Hale are assigned to the hospital at the U.S. Naval Station in San Diego, California. I know I've read about this before. The male lead in it is Jackie Cooper. Jackie Cooper, you know, childhood actor. Go all the way back to like the beginning of movies. He was in Superman 1, 2, and 3. He played Perry White. I think he was in Superman 4 as well. He's in a really famous Columbo episode as well. But this is his first acting credit for Bill Bixby. So how about that? His final acting credit was Blossom, but we're going to get to that later. We'll talk about Blossom later. So let's start working through these credits, yeah? Let's do it. So 1961 is a busy year for Billy. He has like 6 TV appearances in 61, which is crazy. I mean, it's his first year, and he starts with a bang. He does Hennessy, which I talked about, Straight Away, The Many Lives of Dobie Gillis, Ben Casey, Bachelor, Father, and Checkmate. So I don't even know where to start with those. Straight Away was a show about a garage that basically service race cars. Dobie Gillis was a high school show with Tuesday Weld and Bob Denver looking like a beatnik. So Bob Denver, in case you don't know, played Gilligan on Gilligan's Island. But prior to that, he was on Dobie Gillis with like the soul patch, I think, and maybe or maybe a goatee. But I remember he looked like a beatnik. He was on Nick at Night and shit when I was a kid. Ben Casey was a medical show. Checkmate was a PI show. I had the butler from Family Affair. I don't remember his name. It's not Victor French, is it? No, that's not Victor French. Anyway, the butler from Family Affair. And then there's Bachelor Father. This is worth talking about. I had never heard of this. And just the title alone, I was like, all right, I'll bite. So Bachelor Father ran from 57 to 62. It lasted 157 episodes. It's a legit hit, right? Here's the synopsis. The misadventures of a single adoptive father raising a teenage niece with the help of his manservant. I love that. This is my manservant. It gets a little racist here. So John Forsythe was the lead. Noreen Corcoran played daughter Kelly. And Sammy Tong played Peter Tong. So that was the Asian manservant. So let me read a review here. By the way, John Forsythe, the lead in this, had a great career. He was Blake Carrington on Dynasty. So in the 80s, that show Dynasty, the male lead is Blake Carrington. That was John Forsythe. However, in the pilot that didn't air, it was originally George Peppard. George Peppard played Blake Carrington, and then they recast him with John Forsythe. So there's some racist stuff going on with Bachelor Father, particularly around Asians. So let me just read a review first and see if it gets to it. Otherwise, I will find the racist stuff for you. So this review gives it 6 out of 10 stars. And it's titled, A Little Family Responsibility for Uncle Bentley. John Forsythe was in our title role as Bentley Gregg, well-known entertainment lawyer in Hollywood. He's quite the ladies' man and has no intentions of getting married. You get family responsibility with that. I don't understand. But family responsibility comes his way when his orphaned niece, Noreen Corcoran, comes to live with him. This is a new world for Forsythe, but the show is essentially Forsythe coping with new situations that he never thought he would. Completing the household is Sammy Tong as Forsythe's valet, cook, and general factotum. His is a truly tragic Hollywood story as he committed suicide 2 years after Bachelor Father completed its run. Yikes. Can't prove it, but I think John Forsythe's character was based on entertainment attorney and man about town Greg Bautzer. Greg Bautzer made a lot of the gossip columns of the day, escorting some of Hollywood's best-known female stars. Forsythe's character is a kinder, gentler version of Bautzer. Anyway, let me read a tribute here, because I know there was something a little racist going on here. Okay, this is the only primetime series ever to run in consecutive seasons on 3 major television networks. On CBS from 57 to 59, on NBC from 59 to 61, and on ABC from 61 to 62. That is crazy. So it ran all those years consecutively, but on 3 different networks. And I didn't get any of the racist stuff, but I think the Asian manservant thing, I probably just didn't play well. I don't know. I'm guessing that probably did not age well at all. Okay, so let's move on through the 60s. So he continues guesting on TV episodes, episodic stuff. He does like the Annie Griffith Show, Death Valley Days, Follow the Sun. That's that, Follow the Sun was writers in Hawaii, I think it was. Alcoa Premiere, that was an anthology show that was hosted by Fred Astaire, of all people. 2 things to note, though. He did 6 episodes of the Joey Bishop Show. Joey Bishop, of course, was he was a Rat Packer. He was a stand-up comedian from the Bronx, actually. Let's read about this show here. So the Joey Bishop, I keep saying Bishop. The Joey Bishop Show ran from 61 to 65. It lasted 125 episodes. Joey Bishop stars as Joey Barnes, a New York talk show host in this half-hour filmed series about the misadventures of a Hollywood public relations man. How about that? Again, he was a Rat Packer. He was like one of the lesser known ones. Everyone always knows Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. The other two were Peter Lawford and, of course, Joey Bishop. Lawford married into the Kennedy family. He was a British guy who married into the Kennedys, and Bishop was a stand-up from the Bronx. I'm going to read a review of this show because this show is actually very well remembered. It was a great show. Here's a review. Classic sitcom from the early 60s. It's amazing that if some of the episodes from this series are somewhere on either video cassette or DVD, what is he talking? It's amazing that this guy's a fucking illiterate. Let me read the next review. Fucking asshole. Can't spell. Messing up my podcast. All right, here's one. During the 1960s, During the 1960s color boom, many television programs on the air at the time went from black and white to color, and there was one series in particular where the switch occurred during its entire four-season run of Joey Bishop's early sitcom series. Interesting points about Joey Bishop's sitcom, by the way. The Joey Bishop Show was one of the three spinoffs that was based on Danny Thomas's classic television series, Make Room for Daddy. That also spun off The Andy Griffith Show, The Bill Dana Show, and Make Room for Granddaddy. They were all created by Danny Thomas. The series lasted four seasons on the air and was on two major television networks running from September 20th, 61 until March 30th, 65. Anyway, it was more better remembered than that, but I picked, of course, two crappy reviews to read. You'd think I'd do a little more preparation with this whole podcast thing. Let's read a trivia. I made a note that there's an interesting trivia here to read. Oh, I remember what it was now, too. I've got a funny story about it. I will pull it up. One episode... Wait, hold on. Was it the first one? Yeah. One episode of the series, known only as 85, is now considered lost. The episode, filmed on November 15th, 1963, so that's 1 week before Kennedy was murdered, guest-starred comedian and impressionist Vaughn Meader. Meader had skyrocketed to fame impersonating then-President John F. Kennedy. Approximately 1 week later, President Kennedy was assassinated. Not approximately, exactly 1 week. 1 week later, President Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, effectively ending Meader's career. According to a report in the New York Times, the episode was set to air in February 64, but NBC decided to scrap the episode, believing it was disrespectful to the slain president. The same report claimed the tape on which Meader's episode was recorded was erased. So, funny story about that. So, you know, November 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy is murdered, right? He's assassinated. And so it shuts down everything. Back then, they gave a shit about presidents, right? Now, I feel like it would be like a, it would make the news cycle until, you know, Britney Spears wrote a second book about Justin Timberlake, in which case that would then run the news cycle. But it was a big deal. So everything shut down, right? No movies, no plays, Broadway, everything shuts down. Well, at the time, one of the big comics around, and a very controversial comic, was Lenny Bruce. Now, if you don't know Lenny Bruce, go pick up a book or get on Google, read about Lenny Bruce. Lenny Bruce was like, you know, the big inspiration for guys like Carlin and Richard Pryor. He was a character in The Marvelous Miss Maisel. If you want to go watch that show, they had Lenny Bruce on the show. But he was a really, I mean, he got arrested, saying horrible words. Like, he didn't give a shit. Like, he really fought for freedom of speech and all that. He died, I think, early. He had heroin issues, and he died pretty young, I think, of an overdose. But anyway, so everything shuts down. There's no shows. Now, he's scheduled to be doing, forgive me, I think it's either Radio City Music Hall or Carnegie Hall, one of those. We'll say it's Carnegie Hall, right? So he can't, the night that Kennedy gets killed, of course, he canceled it. The next night, he decides to go on. So, maybe several nights later, but he's one of the first people in New York to go perform after President Kennedy has been killed. So the house is packed. It's Carnegie Hall, or maybe it's Radio City Music Hall. We'll say Carnegie Hall. He walks out on stage, and the place is packed, right? And it's silent. And he walks up to the microphone, you know. And keep in mind, Vaughn Meader is a comedian whose only thing is Kennedy impressions. That's all he does. Like, that's what he's famous for. So Lenny Bruce walks out, stands in front of the microphone, looks out at the crowd, pulls out a cigarette, lights a cigarette, starts to smoke this cigarette. He's just waiting, biding his time, smoking a cigarette. Then he leans into the mic and goes, "Well, I guess Vaughn Meader is fucked." And that's how he opened the show. And I don't know that, but his is like considered one of the first performances in New York City after the president had been killed. And he was right. Vaughn Meader was fucked. I'm guessing most of you listening have never even heard of Vaughn Meader. But he was basically a comedian whose only thing was a JFK impersonation. And when the president got assassinated, so did that motherfucker's career. So that is my Lenny Bruce story. That is the Joey Bishop Show. Let's move on. So the other thing I wanted to take note of was that in 62, Bill Bixby did his first film. Now he's done a lot of TV. Now he's going to do some movies. He did Lonely or the Brave, which is a cool title. Let me read the synopsis here. Let me pull it up. Lonely or the Brave. All right. 1962, here is the synopsis. A fiercely independent cowboy gets himself locked up in prison to escape with an old friend. Ooh, very original. I love the originality because that's since been redone like a million different ways. Prison Break, the whole damn TV show had that same premise. But I love these early shows because they were really the ones originating this stuff. So that's pretty awesome. Had a killer cast, this movie. So it's Kirk Douglas, Jenna Rollins, Walter Matthau, Carol O'Connor. How about that shit? George Kennedy? Holy fuck. It's written by Dalton Trumbo too, by the way. Wow. So this movie was serious. So what a great first movie for Bill Bixby. Let's read some trivia. After Kirk Douglas read The Brave Cowboy by Edward Abbey, he purchased the rights to it and gave the project to his friend Dalton Trumbo. Douglas said Trumbo's screenplay was perfect, the best he'd ever read, and he didn't change one word of it. Kirk Douglas also very famously was one of the first people to really give Dalton Trumbo work. So I've never seen the movie Dalton Trumbo, or it's called Trumbo. I guess it was Walter White. What's his name? Bryan Cranston. So Bryan Cranston played Dalton Trumbo in the movie Trumbo. I haven't seen it. But famously, you know, he was blacklisted in the McCarthy hearings and all that shit when they were trying to find communists. Kirk Douglas very famously gave him work and was like, fuck you, McCarthy, and fuck everyone else. He's my friend. I'm going to keep him working. So, and this is one example of that. So we must move on, though. I am running long on this podcast. We are like 30 some odd minutes into this sucker, and it's only 1962. Uh-oh. All right. So we can't move on, though. We can't move on yet, because in 1963, Bill does an episode of The Twilight Zone. And you know I got to talk about it. And it's actually a cool one. It's called The 30-Fathom Grave. Bum, bum, bum. It aired January 10th, 1963. Here's the synopsis. Let's take a look here. As a U.S. Navy destroyer cruises near Guadalcanal in the South Pacific, its sonar detects muted but constant hammering on metal undersea. The eerie sounds emanate from a submarine on the ocean floor, apparently there since World War II. The ship's chief bosun's mate becomes very nervous, having served aboard that sub, and he was its sole survivor. So, wow, the 30-fathom grave. By the way, in case I've never told you this before on the podcast, I was on submarines. I served in the Navy just under 9 years. I was on submarines for 6 of those years. A fathom, by the way, is 6 feet. Crazy, crazy stuff. So apparently there's a submarine that had been lost 20 years prior, and it's at the bottom of the ocean, and they're hearing noises, and this guy was the only survivor. What? Crazy stuff. And I'll tell you what, man. I still, to this day, you know, submarine accidents freak me out. You know, that thing was just went down when they were exploring the Titanic, which was stupid. I never would have gotten on that fucking thing. It sounded like an accident waiting to happen. But I was, in 2000, I was like 1 week into a 6-month deployment on my second submarine when that Russian submarine, the USS Kirk, went down. It sunk. And let me tell you, they didn't die right away. Those Russians were alive for quite a while. And they eventually all slowly died. But that really freaked me out. I mean, here I am, 1 week into a 6-month deployment to the Mediterranean. And here's this brand new Russian submarine that exploded and hit the bottom. And they all died. The entire crew died. So anyway, so that's that. That's the Kursk story. So over the next 3 years, Mr. Bixby does a decent mix of TV and film. He guests on shows like Dr. Kildare, The Danny Thomas Show, The Lieutenant, Combat. He also does a show I've never come across, a show called Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day ran 1964 to 1965, lasted 34 episodes. I'll give you a synopsis because I know you want one. Let's take a look here. Valentine Farrow works for O.D. Dunstall in a New York publishing house. He is young and single and constantly chased by women. Sounds like me. While in the army, he was saved by Rocky Sin, a poker-playing con artist who now serves as Farrow's valet. Sin lives in the basement of Farrow's townhouse with the handyman Grover Fipple. In the office, Libby is Farrow's secretary and Molly the receptionist. Who writes these fucking things? I mean, I'm more confused than I was when I started. Let's take a look at the cast. What do you say? So, no big names. Jack Sue was in it. Jack Sue, of course, was in Barney Miller. Jim Nabors appeared on this. Bill Bixby, of course. Stevie Wonder played himself on it. How about that? How about that? Joe Besser, he was one of the Curly Joe in the later years of the Three Stooges after both Shemp and Curly had retired. They had Joe DiRita and, of course, Joe Besser, who was on this show. James Brolin did this. He's Mr. Barbara Streisand now. Alice Ghostly did this. Ooh, Jim Brown. We lost Jim Brown this year. Mamie Van Doren did this. Alan Hale Jr. did this. He was the skipper. Al Lewis did this. He was the Grandpa Munster. Those two fucking guys. Let's talk about them real quick. I didn't even know they were both in this, right? I'm going to make a note of this because I'll come back to this maybe when I do the written synopsis. So Alan Hale Jr. and Grandpa Al Lewis, I love both these guys because these two guys, were on TV shows for just a handful of years, but they lived the rest of their lives in those characters. You have never seen Alan Hale Jr. not dressed as the fucking skipper ever since he did Gilligan's Island. He died years ago, but I mean, he leaned into it. He was like, I get it. I'm the skipper. And he lived his whole life as a skipper. Same thing as Grandpa Al Lewis. That fucking guy was Grandpa Al Lewis forever. Whereas like Fred Gwynne, who played Herman Munster, hated it. I'm not Herman Munster. I'm not a Frankenstein. But Al Lewis seen in it. So anyway, I think the two of a kind, Alan Hale Jr. And Al Lewis. I love it. I love it. I love it. Milton Berle did this show. How about that? Holy shit. Don Ho did it. Don Ho, the Hawaiian musician there. Who else? The voice of Fred Flintstone, Alan Reed. He did it. Wow, this is a big time thing here. Look at that. So, so that is Valentine's Day. I'm going to read a review because this had a lot of stars in it. I'm going to go ahead and just knock out our little review here. Hilarious. Would love to see it again. I was only 11 years old when I watched this, but I remember being the most adult of any of the comedies on television at the time. It was very strongly implied that Tony Franciosa, one of the stars, had slept with or was trying to sleep with most of the women who appeared on the show. This was at a time when every other show would explicitly reject the idea that their heroes ever thought about sex. I also remember that the exchanges between Jack Sue and Franciosa were hip and hilarious. Well, there you go. This guy liked the show. Now, let's get back into Bill Bixby's career. So during these years now, again, we're cruising through the 60s. He also pops out a few movies. He did Irma LaDuce, 1963. That's a pretty big film. Let me pull it up here. Irma LaDuce. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. It's got a cool 60s vibe poster. Great cast. Jack Lemmon, Shirley MacLaine, right? When a policeman falls in love with a prostitute, which always happens, let's face it. When a policeman falls in love with a prostitute, he doesn't want her to see other men. So he creates an alter ego who will be her only customer. What the fuck is going on? That's so gross. Oh, how about just say, hey, don't be a prostitute anymore instead of pretending to be a John? It's one way to lose your police career. Anyway, again, great cast. It's Jack Lemmon, Shirley MacLaine's, directed by Billy Wilder. Now, Billy Wilder's fucking, he also co-wrote it, by the way. Billy Wilder's a legend, right? He directed, The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, The Apartment with Jack Lemmon, Some Like It Hot with Jack Lemmon, The Spirit of St. Louis, which Jimmy Stewart hated. He was in it and he was miscast. I've talked about it on one of the episodes of the show. He did The 7-Year Itch. That's the famous Marilyn Monroe movie where she stands on the subway grate and blows her dress up, her white dress. She's holding it down. That's Billy Wilder, Sunset Boulevard, tons of others, man. Holy shit, Billy Wilder was legit. But that's Irma LaDuce and Bill Bixby was in it. How about that? Now, also in 63, Bill Bixby did another film with Jack Lemmon. He did Under the Yum Yum Tree. So now we're cruising to 66, right? So it's 1966. Billy did a Best Poster nominee film and Best Title nominee, Ride Beyond Vengeance. I like that title. That to me is a movie I'd fucking rent if I still rented movies. So I guess I do on Amazon. But it's not the same. Let's face it. Not the same. Ride Beyond Vengeance. Great poster. I recommend you take a look at it. I'll read you the synopsis. After an 11-year absence, a buffalo hunter returns home with lots of money in his saddlebags, only to be robbed at gunpoint by a trio of no-good town citizens, prompting an eventual revenge quest. How about that? Let's take a look at the cast. Chuck Connors. He's a fucking badass. Gloria Graham. What is going on? Gloria Graham keeps coming up. She was Violet, the little blonde in It's a Wonderful Life. God damn. I think she's been like 3 or 4 episodes in a row. Claude Akins was in this. I like Claude Akins. I always like him. He looks like a tough guy. Jamie Farr was in this. That's Klinger from MASH. Frank Gorshin. He was the Riddler in the Batman TV show. So that is Ride Beyond Vengeance. Not Ride to Vengeance. Not like Ride Close to Vengeance. Right? It's Ride Beyond fucking Vengeance. Okay. So, guess what else? Because we just covered 1963 through 66 for Bill Bixby. But guess what else Bill Bixby was doing in those years? He was starring in his own damn TV show, y'all. He was doing My Favorite Martian in those 3 years. My Favorite Martian, 1963 to 1966, 107 episodes. This too was a staple for Nick and Knight, just like The Secret Life of Dobie Gillis or some shit like that. Let's read a synopsis. This show was fucking legendary, right? My Favorite Martian. An exoanthropologist from the planet Mars stranded on Earth is rescued by Tim O'Hara, a newspaper reporter who introduces the Martian to his friends and the authorities as his uncle, Martin. Get it? Martian? Martin? You get it. Again, a staple of Nick at Night when I was a kid. The cast is legendary. It's Ray Walston and Bill Bixby. Ray Walston was the Martian, Uncle Martin. He will always be, for eternity, Mr. Hand in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Aloha, Mr. Hand. You know? Oh, God, I love that. Of course, Bill Bixby was Tim O'Hara, the guy who found him and you know became like his nephew, I guess you can say. I made a note to read some trivias here. Let's start with those. Let me scroll, do a little scrollage. I call it scrollage. All right. Ray Walston admitted later that he regretted taking the role of Uncle Martin. He took it for the money and felt that it prevented him from getting substantial roles for many years. He enjoyed working with Bill Bixby and they became lifelong friends. So that's one of them I want to read. Now let me read the other one. Okay. The theme music was performed on an electro theremin by Paul Tanner, a former member of Glenn Miller's band. It motivated Brian Wilson to hire Tanner in 65 and 66 to work with the Beach Boys on their landmark hit, Good Vibrations. Holy shit. Who would have thought that the theme to My Favorite Martian... Let's find that. I don't even know what the theme to My Favorite Martian sounds like. I haven't watched an episode of this in years and years and years. My Favorite Martian theme. We're going to pull it up in live time. We'll see if it reminds us at all of the fucking Beach Boys. Here we go. Let's take a look. And I'm hitting play. And I'm hitting play. It's not playing. Let me pause the podcast here. All right. I'm back. And here we go. My Favorite Martian theme song. To hear it at the beginning, I can hear like this, definitely this same kind of stuff that they did in the beginning of Good Vibrations, so that's kind of cool. Let's read a review. What do you say? Let me pull back up my IMDb here because I had to hop off my phone and reboot it because it was not playing that theme for me. So let's read a review of My Favorite Martian. Was this show well remembered or no? So this person gives it a 7 out of 10. TV's first popular space-age comedy. By the early 1960s, as Americans and Soviets orbited the Earth and the race to place men on the moon was everyone's favorite after-dinner topic, television had produced a variety of space-oriented shows, mostly stodgy adventures of square-jawed heroes facing the cosmos and fanciful rockets. Yet the series that would achieve the greatest popularity didn't feature a human at all, but a Martian in a crashed flying saucer, attempting to pass as human while repairing his spacecraft. Similar in concept to Gore Vidal's Visit to a Small Planet, My Favorite Martian was a sweet-natured comedy with low-budget effects, often silly scripts, but one of the most engaging stars in television history, Ray Walston. Wow, that was a well-written review. Now, I've got some half-assed research for you. Let me read that for you. Bixby took the role of a young reporter Tim O'Hara in the 1963 CBS sitcom My Favorite Martian, in which he co-starred with Ray Walston. By 1966, though, high production costs forced the series to come to an end after 107 episodes. So the show was just too damn expensive, y'all. All right, now we are going to move on to 1967. The Beatles just released Sgt. Pepper and his Lonely Hearts Club Band. Bixby's show, My Favorite Martian, has been canceled. So he just keeps on trucking. Over the next few years, or actually next 2 years, he continues to do a great mix of films and television. He does an episode of That Girl, The Danny Thomas Hour, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Film included Doctor, You've Got to Be Kidding. Let's read about that. Doctor, You've Got to Be Kidding, 1967. This is a what-the-fuck synopsis, by the way. Here, let me read this to you. Heather is the lead singer for a band that it's on its way to fame and fortune. Things get complicated when she becomes pregnant and has three men willing to be both husband and father, but her boss isn't one of them. Okay? Interesting. Who is in this thing? Sandra Dee is the lead. Sandra Dee, George Hamilton, Mr. Tan himself. Of course, Bill Bixby. Who else is in this? Mort Saul. Who? Nichelle Nichols. She was Uhura in Star Trek. She's in this. How about that? Okay. So that is Doctor, You've Got to Be Kidding. I made a note to read a trivia, though, so it must have jumped out at me. Let me pull another trivia. Sandra Dee was on an emotional high when the film first went into production and thoroughly enjoyed the comedy and musical scenes. But then her husband, Bobby Darin, walked out on her and asked for a divorce, which shattered her and made it hard for Dee to concentrate and give a comedic performance. So there you go. In 67, Bill Bixby did an Elvis movie, Clambake. In 68, Bill Bixby did an Elvis movie, Speedway. Poor Elvis, man. He pumped out so many movies. Most of them were garbage. They really were. He should have just gone and toured in Europe. Do you know that Elvis never toured outside of the United States his entire career because of his manager there, Colonel Tom Parker? Isn't that fucked up? But anyway, Bill Bixby did two back-to-back Elvis movies. Then in 69, guess what old Bill Bixby does? He gets his own show again. How about that? How about that? The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Now, I discussed this in a previous episode, but I'll give it a quick once-over again. It went from 69 to 72, 73 episodes. Here is the synopsis. I'll pull it up for you. The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Widower Tom Corbett raises his young son, Eddie. There you go. This thing was a marginal hit. 73 episodes, man. You know, and Bixby got an Emmy nomination for it. So Courtship basically takes him to 72. He's a star at this point. He's got two hit shows under his belt. He's basically a household name. He's been in people's living rooms. Starting in 72, he goes on a run of pretty sweet guest spots on shows like Night Gallery. That was a Rod Serling horror show kind of after he did Twilight Zone. Four episodes of Love American Style. One of them, he played Connie Stevens' husband. Connie Stevens was a character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So how about that? He guested on Laugh-In. His episode of Laugh-In included Jean Stapleton. She was Edith Bunker in All the Family. Also featured Richard Dawson from Hogan's Heroes. And of course, he was the creepy host of Family Feud, always kissing all the ladies and shit. And also it featured Henny Youngman. I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but Henny Youngman was the famous one-liner. Take my wife, please. My wife said she wants to go somewhere new for vacation. I said, try the kitchen. I just flew in from New York. Boy, my arm's tired. That kind of shit. He was featured in Goodfellas playing himself. I used to see him quite a bit in Wolf's Deli in New York City when I was a kid. He'd be sitting there eating by himself, Henny Youngman. And I never approached him or said hi. I really should have. I don't even think Wolf's Deli's around anymore. Wolf's is in Midtown Manhattan. It can't be around anymore because I haven't seen it since. So anyway, that's that. Bill Bixby did Medical Center. He did Barnaby Jones. He also did some TV movies. Boy, do I love TV movies from the 70s. You never know what the fuck you're going to see. Like, it's crazy shit. So here's some examples of some, like, what the hell TV movies from the 70s. He did 1972's The Couple Takes a Wife. Let that sink in. The Couple Takes a Wife. Here's the synopsis. A couple decides to hire a second wife, somebody who looks good and works hard around the house, but complications ensue. You think? I don't think wife number one's going to take too kindly after a while. The cast was Bill Bixby, of course, Paul Apprentice, Myrna Loy, Robert Goulet, Nanette Fabre, Larry Storch, Valerie Perrine. Valerie Perrine was in Superman, right? Penny Marshall was in this. How about that shit? That's pretty cool. It was directed by Jerry Paris. So Jerry Paris, famous actor, but more prolifically, more perfect as a director, really known as a director. He directed 237 episodes of the 255 total Happy Days episodes. So he directed almost every single episode of Happy Days, Jerry Paris did. He also directed this movie. I'm going to read a review of The Couple Takes a Wife. All right. This person gives it 7 out of 10. Often, the ABC Movie of the Week broadcast movies that were actually pilots of television shows. Most of them were unsuccessful and the shows were never made. And few, such as Kolchak, The Night Stalker, actually did make it from a Movie of the Week to a television series. The Couple Takes a Wife is a Movie of the Week that simply screams bad TV sitcom pilot for a series that never got the green light. Plus, it stars Bill Bixby, a guy who appeared in tons of television shows. And it was directed by Jerry Paris, a guy who directed tons of TV shows and sitcoms, such as The Dick Van Dyke Show and Happy Days. There, so this guy just does not like it. Well, there you go. So that is The Couple Takes a Wife. Now, another what in the hell am I looking at TV movie that Bill Bixby starred in was 1973's Steam Bath. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. This movie was really popular, and you'll find out why here in a second. But it's called Steam Bath. Random people who found themselves in a steam room quickly realize that it's a gateway to the afterlife and that the eccentric Puerto Rican janitor is actually God. Oh boy. Again, random people who find themselves in a steam room quickly realize that it's a gateway to the afterlife and that the eccentric Puerto Rican janitor is actually God. That is Steam Bath. Now let's look at the cast. And again, you're going to find out why it's popular here in a second. Bill Bixby, Herb Edelman, he was Stan Zbornak in The Golden Girls. Valerie Perrine from Superman, she's back. Jose Perez, I guess he was the Puerto Rican god. So that's that. Where do we get to the good stuff? So it actually got two Emmy nominations. It got Outstanding Special, and it got Best Writing in a Drama nominations. But you wonder why it was popular? Okay, I'll read some trivia for you. How about that? And then you're going to know why this was so ding-dang popular. Let's get to the trivia. So the first one I'm going to read is this one. Valerie Perrine, again from Superman, became the first woman to display on purpose her nipples on American network television during the broadcast of this movie on Hollywood Television Theater, which was PBS, which is local educational TV, right? PBS, public channel. Valerie Perrine was seen taking a shower from the side and her butt was in full view. Only a few PBS stations were adventurous enough to carry the program, and therein lies its popularity. But wait, there's more. This was the first American-produced television program to feature nudity. PBS already had broadcast British-produced programs featuring nude scenes. Well, and there's a little more here. In 2014, GQ magazine listed Valerie Perrine taking off her towel as the most underrated nude moment in TV history. So that's why this motherfucker was so popular. So that's Steam Bath. Okay, let's move on. Guess what Bill Bixby does in 1973? Are you guessing? If you guessed that he got his own damn show again, you'd be right. He got his own show for the third time. He did the oft-forgotten The Magician. A lot of folks don't know about The Magician, but it was a marginal hit. I mean, it gave him a year's worth of work. So The Magician ran from 73 to 74. It lasted 22 episodes. Here's the synopsis. The cases of a stage magician slash escape artist who moonlights as an amateur crime fighter. Pretty cool. It was created by Bruce Lansbury. That's Angela Lansbury's little brother. For those of you not in the know, Angela Lansbury was the lead in Murder, She Wrote. So anyway, this was her little brother created this. I made a note to read a little trivia. A little trivia on this sucker. Let's take a look here. Bill Bixby actually learned how to do the magic tricks for this role. So for most of the magic, there was no trick photographer used at all. Some magic did use the frame of the camera or edits to allow effects that would not have been possible otherwise. So there you go. Now, I made a note to read another trivia. In The Great Spontini, which was the May 9th, 1974 episode, Sam Beckett, played by Scott Beck. Okay, never mind here. Hold on. 1990, Sam Beckett. Okay, this is actually, I didn't read it properly. So what this trivia is going to reference is the show Quantum Leap. In The Great Spontini, which was a 1990 episode, May 9th, 1974, Sam Beckett, played by Scott Bakula, jumps into a magician in 74 who plans on auditioning for Bill Bixby's The Magician. Sam mistakenly thinks he's going to try out for The Incredible Hulk, to which his young companion says, Harry, I don't think a great actor like Bill Bixby, a magician, is going to play a green comic book character. So all that was to say this. I guess this show was referenced in Quantum Leap. Boy, did I mess that up when I read it. But it is what it is. Not a perfect podcast. That is The Magician. So The Magician ended quickly, right, in 1974. Again, only 22 episodes. But that's okay because Bill Bixby can always fall back on some classic TV gigs, like four episodes of Ironside, an episode of Mannix, two episodes of The Streets of San Francisco, 1977 episode of Fantasy Island, and not just any 1977 episode. He did the pilot with Dick Sargent. So I talked about that in the Dick Sargent episode. Dick Sargent did the pilot of Fantasy Island. So did Bill Bixby, right? And it was with Victoria Principal, Sandra Dee, she's back, Peter Lawford, he was one of the Rat Packers, rather, that I referenced, he was in this. Now, that very same year, 1977, Bill also did The Love Boat. So imagine that the same year doing Fantasy Island and The Love Boat, shows that are most famous for his guest stars, right? Fellow guests on The Love Boat episode included Milton Berle, Charo, Audra Lindley. Audra Lindley was Mrs. Roper on Three's Company. This was only the fourth episode of Love Boat. So basically, Bill Bixby's an OG. He's in the first ever episode of Fantasy Island, the fourth ever episode of Love Boat. He's just kicking ass. Now, during this stretch, he also did some not-so-classic TV shows, which we'll read about. He did a 1976 episode of Spencer's Pilots. I never heard of it. It sounds really fucking boring, actually. So, of course, I'll read about it, right? Because, you know, if it's boring, it's podcast fodder. So, Again, Spencer's Pilots lasted 11 episodes in 1976. Here's the synopsis. This series centers on the lives of Cass Garrett and Stan Lewis, who are pilots, and they work for Spencer Parrish. Every now and then, they get into all sorts of misadventures because one of their jobs goes wrong or someone from their past shows up and et cetera, et cetera. So, all right, I'll read a review, though. Let's see if it's any good. Let's see what people thought. I'm a man of the people. This person says it's my favorite TV show of the late 70s. I don't remember the drama, but being an absolute keen helicopter fan, watching Spencer's Pilots showing stunts on TV was a treat for me when I was 12. I never saw anything like it again. I'm glad there's still people who remember it after 24 years. Here's another one. Spencer's Pilots was a great CBS air adventure series that paved the way for the popular 80s CBS series Airwolf with Jan Michael Vincent. I did a whole episode about Jan Michael Vincent earlier this season. I watched the show in 76. I was impressed by the photography of the air stunts and the acting. So there you go. I guess it was well-liked. It was a helicopter show, I suppose. So there you go. Now, another not-so-classic show that I should mention was Tales of the Unexpected. Bill Bixby did it in 1977, which was the only year it was on because it only lasted 8 episodes. So Tales of the Unexpected, 1977, 8 episodes. Anthology series presenting stories of suspense, mystery, and science fiction, usually with some sort of twist ending. I'll take it. Let's take a look at some of the people. It was narrated by William Conrad. Actors that appeared in it were Lloyd Bridges, Ricky Nelson, David Burney, Ned Beatty, Robert Pine, Christina Balfour from Banachek, Eugene Roche. He was in a ton of shit. What was he, Eugene Roche, in? He's a character actor if I've ever seen one. He's been in so many things. Soap, Foul Play. Yeah, he did a ton of stuff. That guy was around forever. Who else did this show? Carl Weathers. That's Apollo Creed. How about that? Herb Edelman, Stan Zbornik from Golden Girls. He came up earlier. Van Williams did it. Like Eve Plum, that's Jan Brady. She did it. Only 8 episodes, but boy, they killed it with some guest hosts. Jenny O'Hara, female character actor. She's been in fucking everything, Jenny O'Hara. Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap. There you go. It all comes full circle on Fanacek. Let's see. Who else did this show? Anyone else? Come on, don't let me down. IMDb, don't let me down. I'm scrolling. There's got to be at least one more person I know. Damn you all to hell. That might be it. There's a bunch of people, but I don't know any of them. But that is Tales of the Unexpected. Want to read a review of that? Let's do it. Why not, right? Pull it back up here. Let's see what the people thought of this. Great Obscure Show is what it's called. This show ran for such a short time that few people ever heard of it and is often confused with Roald Dahl's show of the same title. I have 5 episodes of the show on video, my absolute favorite being No Way Out with Bill Bixby. All right, there you go. I liked just about any series that Quinn Martin produced, and this was one of my favorites. If I can ever find the other shows in the series, I'll write an episode guide. The series was called Twist in the Tale in the UK, but almost no information can be found about it. There you go, whatever. Here's another one. Great show. Fantastic. I've been wondering about this series for years. My hopes were raised when the William Shatner 1998 series first aired, bearing the same title. Blah, 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 blah. So there you go. I guess I try to bring it back with Shatner. Who knows? But that is Tales of the Unexpected. Now, also during this stretch, which I promise is leading to the big green guy, I promise, Bill Bixby did some movies as well. One of them was a classic. It was a Disney classic. 1975's The Apple Dumpling Gang. Boy, did I love this movie. This was one of those movies they'd roll in the TV on a cart in the classroom, like in 6th grade, 5th grade, whatever. Here comes the big cart on wheels. They're rolling in with the TV. And this was one of those movies they'd show in school. The Apple Dumpling Gang, like I said, it's a Disney classic. I'll read you the synopsis. 3 orphan children strike gold in 1878 California. The stars: Bill Bixby, Susan Clark from Webster, Don Knotts, legend, Tim Conway, legend. We talked about Carol Burnett earlier. Slim Pickens, Harry Morgan from MASH, legend. Who else? Come on. Don't fail me. There's got to be someone. Bing Russell, that's Kurt Russell's father. How about that? Great, great movie. I loved this movie as a kid. This was the last cinema film that Bill Bixby ever did. The last movie he ever did that played in movie theaters was this one. So other movies during this time frame for Bill Bixby included the miniseries Rich Man, Poor Man, and a very interesting TV movie, 1976's The Great Houdini. I'm going to read about it. The Great Houdini, a biography of renowned escape artist Harry Houdini, examining his fascination with the occult and his promise to his wife on his deathbed that he would contact her from the great beyond if it were at all possible. And I guess legend goes he gave her a safe word or a word, you know, that would indicate it was him, and she never got that word. So I guess he never came back from the dead. So there's that. Great cast. Paul Michael Glaser played Houdini. He, of course, was Hutch in Starsky and Hutch, right? Was he Starsky? Which one was he? Paul Michael Glaser was Starsky. I always get those two fuckers confused. He was Starsky. Sally Struthers was in this. That's, of course, Gloria Stivick in All in the Family. Vivian Vance was in this. That's Ethel Mertz from, I Love Lucy. Adrian Barbeau from Maude was in this. Peter Cushing was in this. Great cast, man. Good stuff. How about that? Anything else I want to talk about here? Okay, so again, Paul Michael Glaser was the lead, but Robert Blake was offered the role and turned it down, as was Charles Bronson. He was offered the role and turned it down. Neither one of those guys. So, I guess neither one of them wanted to play Houdini, so Paul Michael Glaser got it. So, you know, of course, Robert Blake was playing Beretta. Charles Bronson was fucking legendary at that point. But anyway, another interesting TV movie featuring Bill Bixby was 1977's Black Market Baby. How about that? You had to read about that. Black Market Baby, 1977. After a young college girl becomes pregnant, she and the baby's father are targeted by a black market adoption ring that is out to get the baby. The lead is Linda Pearl. She plays the teenage pregnant chick. She's been in a ton of stuff. Happy Days. She was the woman Fonzie eventually ended up with. Most recently, again, I've said this a million times, she played Pam Beasley's mom on The Office. Desi Arnaz Jr. was in this. How about that? Tom Bosley was in this. He was Mr. Cunningham on Happy Days. Annie Potts was in this in her first film. How about that? Annie Potts, of course, famous for a million things. She was a secretary in Ghostbusters. She was on Designing Women. Legendary career. This was her first ever movie. How about that? It's funny. So Black Market Baby, it made me laugh. So I recently came across a clip on Facebook from the movie Bruno. Sacha Baron Cohen made that movie Bruno, where he plays like a gay German model. And there's a clip where he goes onto this talk show with a black baby. And it's largely a black audience, and they get very upset. He's talking about how he went to Africa. He went to Africa and traded an iPod for the baby, or an iPad for the baby, I don't know, and got the baby. And everyone's upset in the audience. And he's like, I gave the baby a traditional African name, OJ. And I was like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, I guess Black Market Baby made me think of that. But okay. So let's get to it. Here's why we're all here, right? It's 1977. There's a gas shortage. Jimmy Carter is president. He's taking a beating. No one likes Jimmy Carter. And what else happened? Oh, the Incredible Hulk premiered, starring Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. And guess what? We'll talk about it in the next episode. So that wraps up Bill Bixby Part 1. Only Fanacek can go an hour and 1 hour and 2 minutes on Bill Bixby and not even get to the Incredible Hulk. But I promise you, we're going to start off Part 2 with the Incredible Hulk. That is Bill Bixby Part 1. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please rate it, review it. That always helps. Hit me up on Facebook, Real Fanacek, or email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. I'll send you stickers. I send out stickers almost every week to all parts of the world. If you want some Fanacek stickers, let me know. I'm also on Twitter, Fanacek Podcast. I think that's it, at Fanacek Podcast. But you know what I need you to do? I need you to just kind of find a comfy seat. Maybe in your favorite room of the house, pour a drink. I'm a bourbon guy. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're a tequila person. Maybe you're a wine person. Maybe you're a club soda with lemon person. But get comfortable. Breathe, relax, and just stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.